you who nurtures and sustains. Please be with me and with us as we search for your life-giving ways in these old and new words. Amen. Good morning. My name is Jason, and I am your ministry intern. Feels like I've been saying that a lot over the past couple weeks, because that's what you do, right? When you meet someone new, you give a quick snapshot of yourself, a little commercial, your name, a bit about yourself, just to get the conversation started. But truly, getting to know someone, getting a full picture, takes time, doesn't it? My first day here at Jubilee, probably my first hour actually, Pat in the office handed me a hot-off-the-presses Jubilee United Church directory. And I looked through it, picture and name, picture and name, page after page of pictures and names, and you look good in these pictures. You look happy. You look friendly in these pictures. But after about six pages, I closed the directory and I put it in my bag. Because for me, at least at that point, it was all just pictures and names. There was not yet any memory, no shared experience, no understanding of where you have been or where you are going. So any story about the pictures and names would simply have been put there by my own imagination, my own biases, my own hopes and fears for this internship. And so I closed it and put away. But who do you say that I am? This question posed by Jesus to his disciples is the central element, the central question in our gospel reading this morning. But who do you say that I am? Some context. Jesus is still in the Galilean countryside here. He has already put in a solid day's work feeding 4,000 people with seven loaves of bread, and he has already healed the blind man in Bethsaida. This is Jesus at the top of his game. He has spent months gathering followers and healing and teaching and getting people all riled up for God's and God's coming kingdom. The movement is building, and there is an energy and vitality surrounding Jesus that draws people to him. After years of getting the short end of the economic and political stick, people are beginning to see Jesus as their golden ticket, their way out of suffering, their way out of oppression. Especially those privileged few in Jesus' inner circle, the disciples, the 12, the suddenly central members of the cool kids club. Perhaps, this is the one we have been waiting for. They whisper to each other. Perhaps this is the promised one, the one who will return our side to glory, and we will be right there with him. My father said that I would never be more than a fisherman. Well, I'll show him. I'll show them all, because I'm going straight to the top, and Jesus is going to take me there. He is powerful, and he is wise, and he sees something special in me. Yeah, with me by his side, Jerusalem won't stand a chance. Rome won't stand a chance. We'll show them all. And on the way, Jesus asked them, "Who do the people say that I am?" His disciples reply, "The people say you are John the Baptist. Others say Elijah, one of the prophets. And you? Who do you say that I am?" Who is Jesus? This has been a central element, a central question of the Christian faith. As we heard, Peter has an idea. In other places in the New Testament, we read that Paul has a very different idea. Who is Jesus? The Roman Emperor Constantine, who put a symbol of Christ on the shields of his conquering army, would have a very different answer from the Christian hermit retreating to the desert for a life of prayerful solitude. Martin Luther would have a very different answer from Martin Luther King Jr. Thomas Merton, the megachurch evangelist. Westboro Baptist Church, Jubilee United Church. Who is Jesus? It is a central question, and even the scriptures can't agree. Is he Mark's suffering servant or Matthew's fulfillment of the Jewish scriptures? Is he the quintessential human, as in Luke, or John's great cosmic figure through whom the whole universe was created? Who is Jesus? It is a question that has ripped us apart. Schism and Reformation and Counter-Reformation and colonialism and war. Who is Jesus? Here's the thing. He is multiple and he is mobile, and no one except for God gets a full picture. We see Jesus through our own lenses, through our own desires, our own hopes and fears. And so when Peter says, "You are the Messiah," he is commenting more about himself than he is Jesus. Because the prevailing thought was that the Messiah would be a great leader that would set things right. He would vanquish the oppressors. The Messiah would be the warrior prophet wielding all the power of heaven and earth, mortal and military power. And that sounds pretty good to Peter. He wants the good times to keep rolling. He wants to keep his central place in the heart of this new and exciting movement. "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind on divine things. Not on divine things, but on human things." This is not gentle Jesus, meek and mild. His edges are rough. His words are sharp. This is not because he is mean or without compassion, but because he's got somewhere to go. He has somewhere hard to go, and he needs help getting there. This story in Mark 8 is the hinge point in the whole gospel story. This is where everything flips, where everything changes. The heady days of healing, teaching, and recruiting followers are coming to an end. Jesus has turned his face towards Jerusalem and the conflict he will find there with empire. His face is set like flint as he looks beyond the horizon. He knows what awaits him there. This is the hinge point, and Jesus has started walking towards the heart of the world's suffering and his own suffering, and that is hard. And when Peter is confronted with reality, when he is confronted with where Jesus is going, he doesn't want to believe it. This picture of Jesus doesn't match up with the one in his head, and so he reacts out of fear for his friend and for himself. If that is where he is going, what does it mean for me? Yes, we must explore and debate and pray on who Jesus is. But in this exploration and debate and prayer, we cannot lose sight of where Jesus is going. Perhaps this should be the central question of our faith. If that is where he is going, what does it mean for us? To be his follower, we don't just need to pick up a cross. We need to know where we are carrying it. A couple weeks ago, I was at a workshop on church development outside of the city, and as a warm-up exercise, the facilitator had us break off into pairs, and we were to do 30-second commercials about ourselves by answering certain questions. Then after 30 seconds, the other person would give their commercial, and after another 30 seconds, we would move on to someone else and repeat the process. Now, as an introvert, this kind of thing is not my favorite thing, but I was playing along as best as I could. On the third of these cycles, my eyes met those of a woman I did not know, and we each did that awkward shrug to indicate that we would be paired up next. And the question we were to answer was, "What is the best part of your day?" And there was another awkward shrug, and it was agreed that I would start. And so I spent my 30 seconds talking about how we've got our nightly routines at home with our boys. After baths and a show and stories, our three-year-old Simon will insist that I stay for a snuggle. So we turn out the lights and get under the covers, and for a few minutes, we just talk about our days or what fun things we will do tomorrow. And as I tuck him in, I tell him I love him and that I'm really thankful to be his dad. It's the best part of my day. The bell rings. It's now my partner's turn. And I had never met her before, but she looked like a lot of people I know. My mind raced ahead and created a whole story based on the picture in my head. My biases built expectations of the kinds of things she might say. And then she turned her face to mine and said something I did not expect. She said, "Listening to you made me realize that the best part of your day is often the worst part of mine. My husband died a couple months ago, and now everything is different. I guess I'm feeling lost and out of rhythm and don't really know where to go from here." And then a bell rings and it's time to move on. Jesus walks into the heart of the world suffering and transforms it in his flesh. That is where he is going. That is who he is. But he does not go alone. He gathers people to himself and names them his disciples and friends. And even after his worldly mission has ended, these disciples and friends are to love each other as he continues to love them. To hold on to him, they are to hold on to each other. Outside of what we have in the New Testament, there is very little historical record to fill in the picture of Jesus. There is, however, a passage in the works of the first century Jewish historian Flavius Josephus that mentions Jesus. Scholars generally agree on this following version of Josephus' account. "At this time there appeared Jesus, a wise man, for he was a doer of startling deeds, a teacher of people who received the truth with pleasure. And he gained a following, both among many Jews and among many of Greek origin. And when Pilate, because of an accusation made by the leading men among us, condemned him to the cross, those who had loved him previously did not cease to do so. And up until this very day, the tribe of Christians has not died out." Those who had loved him previously did not cease to do so. Jesus is the hinge point for a movement defined by love. Being his disciple means walking towards the heart of the world to fully engage with its joy and its pain. Being his disciple means standing in the way of empire in all of its past and current manifestations. Being his disciple means looking beyond our own expectations, perceptions, and biases and seeing the complex, beautiful, an unexpected story unfolding in each one of us. "Where are you going? And can you take me with you?" The woman I met in the workshop is now part of me, shaping how I see Jesus' continuing mission in the world. And I have heard that her own faith community is wrapping itself around her in this time of need. This is the mission and promise of the Christian community. We do not walk alone. In God's love, we bear each other, we celebrate each other, we empower each other. By journeying with each other, we fill in the picture of Jesus. We become more complete in him, and he becomes more complete in us. "Hi, my name is Jason, and I'm your ministry intern. But that is not all that I am. I'm a dad, and a husband, and a student, and a pilgrim, and I've experienced great joy and great suffering. We are all multiple and mobile, and we are all complex and beautiful. I'm new here, and the picture of Jubilee United Church is still coming into focus for me. But what I've seen so far of this community is a people dedicated to journeying together in worship, in music, in prayer, in the shared table. This community is a place to encounter God and engage in the joy and pain of this world together. This is a place where we explore our faith through shared experience. This is a place where we live out our discipleship and continue to ask the fundamental questions. Jesus turns his face, gazing far beyond the horizon. We stop and ask, "Where are you going? And can you take me with you?"